By pulling together, they have more diplomatic clout and capability to negotiate with China together.
The U.S. and China discuss thorny issues. It's Tuesday, November 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. You can find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, China coal use heats up. ICE tells about global warming. A virtual literary festival. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Taiwan is expected to top the agenda when U.S. President Joe Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping meet virtually shortly after the time of our broadcast in Washington to discuss how both countries can responsibly manage their ongoing competition. White House officials announced the meeting Friday following a surprise agreement on climate change made between China and the United States on the sidelines of the UN Summit on Climate Change, known as COP26 in Glasgow, Scotland. After finding common ground at COP26, the president's call is expected to touch on some sensitive topics, such as China's nuclear buildup and a potential trade agreement that could end a long-standing dispute that began under former U.S. President Donald Trump. It could also touch on Taiwan. VOA Asia takes a look at why Western countries back Taiwan, despite their pro-China policies, in the following analysis written by Ralph Jennings and narrated by VOA's Amy Hybels.
Over the past 4 months, officials from two European countries, the European Parliament, and the United States have made overtures to Taiwan. Freddie Lim, a member of the Taiwan Parliament's Foreign Relations Committee, has taken notice. The real meaning, the reason is that international communication with Taiwan can start being put on the table now. Before, of course, all countries were having communication with Taiwan, but in the past, it was all under the table. China sees self-ruled democratic Taiwan as part of its territory and has threatened force, if necessary, to bring the island under its flag, a leftover from the Chinese Civil War of the 1940s when the nationalists rebased in Taiwan after losing to the communists on the mainland. Taiwan has formal diplomatic recognition from just 15 small countries worldwide, although informal relations with other countries do continue. Analysts say Western countries' recent dealings with Taiwan serve as a warning to China, Taiwan's longtime political rival. Sean Su is an independent political analyst in Taiwan.
By pulling together, they have more diplomatic clout and capability to negotiate with China together, as opposed on a one-to-one basis. And it's a tactic that's been used throughout history.
Other countries are teaming up in case China pushes too hard against Taiwan, dissenters in Hong Kong, or its own Muslim minority in the Xinjiang region, causes where democratic Western leaders often favor the pushed over the pusher, analysts say. In July, Lithuania agreed to allow Taiwan to set up a representative office, leading China to recall its ambassador. The Czech Republic's Senate president took a delegation of 89 leaders to Taiwan in August. Last month, the European Parliament decided to deepen economic and diplomatic relations with Taiwan. Taiwan's foreign minister visited Brussels at the end of October, and four U.S. senators recently traveled to Taiwan. Derek Grossman, a senior defense analyst with the U.S.-based RAND Corporation, says Western leaders have tired of China's authoritarian tendencies.
I think what we're seeing with the Lithuanians of the world is sort of a banding together for a common cause, which is we need to reject the authoritarian model in international affairs if it comes to our shores and it impacts us or has the potential to impact us. And that is manifested, of course, in support to Taiwan.
Stephen Nagy, a senior associate professor of politics and international studies at International Christian University in Tokyo, says a critical mass of countries acting in Taiwan's favor could help head off any conflict. China's almost daily dispatch of military planes into Taiwan's air defense identification zone since mid-2020 has raised fears offshore of a pending firefight. On the peacemaking side, countries voicing support for Taiwan have said they plan to uphold their own one-China policies, which means recognizing Beijing diplomatically over Taipei. Here's Stephen Nagy.
I think already we're seeing the movements towards trying to prevent a conflict between Taiwan and China, and that's sending the strong signals through backdoor diplomacy that the one-China policy hasn't shifted and that they support peace and stability across the Taiwan Straits and that they don't support either Taiwanese independence or a forced reunification.
A spokesperson for Beijing's Taiwan Affairs Office recently said the Taipei government's cooperation with external forces and continued independence provocations were the root cause for tension between the two sides, including the sending of a combined 700 Chinese aircraft into the Taiwanese Air Defense Identification Zone. Grossman says countries like India and Vietnam are eager to back one another economically to make up the difference in case of economic reprisals from China. Vietnam and India have spoken out against China over Asian sovereignty disputes. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in San Francisco for contributing this story. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. Check us out on Facebook and, of course, our website, voanews.com. Stay with VOA Asia, as in a moment, we look at a surge in coal use by China. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Taiwan may top Biden's Xi call, but experts say not to expect much. Myanmar frees U.S. journalist detained since May. Philippine President Duterte to seek Senate seat in 2022 elections. Pakistan begins immunizing millions against measles and rubella. Thai protesters rally for reforms of monarchy after court rules against activists. You'll find expanded coverage of each of these stories and more at Facebook at VOA Asia. Stop by our Instagram page, see us on Twitter, and at the voanews.com website. We have more VOA Asia for you right now. China's output of coal increased to its highest level since at least March 2015, after authorities gave permission for mine expansions to boost supply and ease record prices. Chinese coal imports from Russia surged in September, but one of its traditional suppliers, Australia, remains frozen out of the lucrative trade because of diplomatic tensions. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
China, the world's leading consumer of coal, has an energy shortage, triggered by strong demand from its manufacturers, industry, and households. The government in Beijing is determined to avoid more power cuts. Since July, China has approved expansions at more than 150 coal mines, according to the National Development and Reform Commission. Figures from China's National Bureau of Statistics showed domestic coal production exceeded 357 million tons in October, up from 334 million tons the previous month. Official customs data has also shown that China imported about 3.7 million tons of thermal coal from Russia, the main fuel for electricity generation in September, up more than a quarter from August. However, one of the world's main coal producers, Australia, is noticeably absent from the list of nations shipping coal to China. It was a prolific exporter of coal to China before an unofficial ban was imposed in late 2020, after Canberra supported calls for an international inquiry into the origins of COVID-19, the disease first detected in China. Beijing interpreted the move as criticism of its handling of the virus, and a range of trade restrictions were brought in. China does have long-term plans to slash the use of coal and fossil fuels. Sam Jewell from China Dialogue and Environmental Policy Group told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that China's consumption of coal will oscillate to reflect domestic political necessities. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, the first climate actions being taken following the COP26 summit. Happening now in Asia, after 176 days in a Myanmar prison, American journalist Danny Fenster is finally on his way home. Fenster was freed Monday, days after a Yangon court sentenced him to 11 years in prison on charges filed by the junta. The release comes after negotiations between the Myanmar military government and top U.S. officials. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us on this Tuesday for VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. With the United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP26, now over, countries are looking to begin funding a global counterattack on rising temperatures on Earth. Meanwhile, scientists in Denmark are searching for clues to our warming planet's future by studying ice from the past. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Under dim lights, so as not to contaminate the sample, researchers cut frozen sediment in a journey through time to an ecosystem of the past.
We're trying to learn more about what that environment was like, what the climate conditions were like at that time, and use that information to understand how sensitive the Greenland ice sheet may be to melting under human-caused climate change in the future.
Andrew Christ is one of the researchers at the Ice Core Archive in the University of Copenhagen's Niels Bohr Institute. At this library, samples like the one he cut through earlier sit on shelves awaiting study. The frozen, muddy sediments once lay nearly 1.5 kilometers beneath the Greenland ice sheet. U.S. scientists drilled them out in the 1960s as part of an effort to establish a military base there. Experts say those deep samples are the only ones worth studying.
All the meteorological measurements and atmospheric measurements humans have done in the last 100 years or so are already influenced by climate change that is human-caused. So if we want to see the natural state of climate and natural variability, then we need to go way, way further back in time.
The Niels Bohr Institute's Bo Vitner is part of the international team of scientists using a technique called luminescence dating that reveals when minerals last had direct sunlight. Along with other readings, it could show previous temperatures when the Greenland ice sheet previously melted away. Initial results from 2020 suggest that happened in the past million years. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
This year's recent 1455 Summer Literacy Festival, an annual free 3-day virtual program sponsored by a group of universities in Virginia, featured over 200 authors, poets, and creative artists sharing their insights into the art of storytelling. For details of the festival, Maxim Moskalkov is our storyteller.
The annual 3-day-long 1455 Summer Literary Festival was held virtually because of the lingering effects of COVID. Still, the festival hosted over 70 talks between authors and readers. The virtual format helped attract a more international crowd to the sessions on storytelling, says festival director Sean Murphy.
We want to interrogate and look at storytelling as an art form, literary fiction and poetry and writing and journalism, but we're also looking at sports reporting, we're looking at political reporting, we're looking at dance, and we're looking at performing arts. What does storytelling mean?
The festival's headliner this year was Douglas Stewart, a Scottish-American writer and fashion designer. His debut novel, Shaggy Bane, was awarded the 2020 Booker Prize. Stewart wrote his coming-of-age story set in 1980s Scotland while living in New York and working in the fashion industry. He says his manuscript was rejected by publishers over 40 times.
But I was so excited when Shuggie was going to join the world in February 2020. I'd been waiting for that moment for so long. And so you can probably imagine my disappointment when my book arrives in a bookstore at the end of February, and then the week later, the world closes down because of the pandemic.
Philippe Cousteau, American oceanographer and environmental activist, presented his series of children's books about endangered animal species.
My grandfather, Jacques Cousteau, was a world-renowned environmental advocate and ocean explorer and storyteller, my father Philippe Sr. as well. And so I come from a generations-long legacy of storytellers, recognizing that story is essentially the language of learning.
Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and find us on Instagram and YouTube. Of course, at our website as well, voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our team. Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, Chris Cascao, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.